Support for this podcast comes from Avangrid.
This is definitely a blue-collar community, and I'm kind of a blue-collar guy.
Rick Sealscott didn't see himself as a farmer, but wasn't about to sell his grandparents' Ohio farm. An Avangrid wind farm pays millions to the community and landowners like him each year.
Farming's up and down, but the wind turbines give us steady income. We're holding on to the farm, and we're making money. And I would absolutely do it again.
Discover where energy meets humanity at avangrid.com.
From the New York Times, I'm Michael Barbaro. This is The Daily. Today, a caravan of Central American migrants is moving north through Mexico, headed for the U.S. border. Why the Republicans won't stop talking about it, and the Democrats are trying not to. It's Wednesday, October 24th.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Yeah. Yes.
Are you in Mexico City?
No, I was in Mexico City for a conference over the weekend. And then I decided to come down to join this caravan as it makes its way north.
Did you get there today?
I arrived a couple of hours ago. Yeah, I left Mexico City this morning, flew into Tapachula, and we got a van and a driver, kind of a beat up blue minivan with non-working doors.
and what's your plan next?
Well, actually, I think I should try to find the van. And so I don't get left behind here on the highway, but I'm happy to talk again. And
okay.
I'll just send you audio that I'm getting
great
from the road.
Okay.
But I'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, sounds good.
Sounds great. Good. Thank you, Claire.
Thank you, Annie.
So my name is Annie Coriel. I'm a reporter based in New York. I'm in Chiapas in southern Mexico now, following the migrant caravan as it makes its way north to the U.S. border. This is sort of the tail end of the caravan because thousands of people have been heading along this route all day. So you can see evidence of that on the highway. There are orange peels and napkins and empty bottles of water. There are ambulances that are, and there's a Mexican Red Cross van that's going alongside with the migrants as they travel. They've sort of brought traffic to a standstill, and almost every car and truck is filled with a dozen people. It's really hot. The sun is just beating down. It was supposed to rain today, but there doesn't seem to be a cloud in the sky. Behind me, there's a man who is carrying a large white flag. He says, you know, it's a message that they come in peace. And the news today is that there's another group that's sort of trying to join this caravan as it makes its way north. And we can talk a little bit more about the political stuff when I'm not on the highway with the caravan itself.
And you know, what's happening right now as a large group of people, they call it a caravan.
Caravan 7,000 strong is
the so-called caravan,
growing to a mile long as it's heading straight up to our border.
What do you think of this caravan we see? What should the president and the Congress do?
Send the Marines. Send the military to the border to secure our border.
Now the president is trying to bring home a House victory on November the 6th, or at least narrow the losses by leaning heavily into this caravan as a threat to national security.
This will be the election of the caravan, Kavanaugh, law and order, tax cuts, and common sense. That's what it is.
Common sense.
Annie, what exactly is this caravan?
What we're hearing, and it's difficult to verify, but it was very much a grassroots effort that was started through social media. Hmm. There were people in three places in Honduras, La Ceiba, Tegucigalpa, and San Pedro Sula, through their own social network, mm-hmm. started telling people that they were going to create this caravan and move north. And they converged in San Pedro Sula about 10 days ago. And they say they told the media in Honduras because they wanted people to join. Mm. For the most part, caravans offer people safety in numbers. And they told the media, and suddenly more and more people started coming together.
So the idea is that a large group of people is a protected group of people, because this does very much sound like the opposite of how we think of people attempting to sneak into the U.S. in small, inconspicuous groups. So it's about scale.
Yes, it's about safety, both from drug gangs along the route, which have been known to kidnap migrants from Central America, and it's a sense of safety from the Mexican authorities themselves. The Mexican government has deported somewhere around 70,000 people this year. So people have a reason to be afraid that they could be deported if they're caught. And there's a sense that with something this big, it would look really bad if the government tried to crack down. So most people in the caravan have decided not to apply for papers or try to do this in a legal way. And they're just moving forward with the sense and the hope that they'll be allowed to make it all the way to the United States. Now, this happened earlier this year in the spring. Another caravan made its way north. It was only 1,500 people. Mm-hmm. Some 200 actually managed to get in the U.S. And that caravan attracted attention because of the president's reaction, because of President Trump's reaction.
Right. I remember this.
Yeah. He called them invaders, sent the National Guard. So many people are making a comparison to that first caravan in the spring. But oddly, a lot of the people who are migrating right now say that they haven't even heard of that earlier caravan.
Hmm. From what you're saying, this is not a unique situation.
It's not unusual. I think that it's unusual to see large numbers. This is by far the largest anyone who I've spoken to has heard of.
Annie, who are you meeting as you travel with the caravan? And what are they telling you about why they're making this journey northward toward the U.S.?
Some of the surprises have been the number of, you know, mothers with small children. The number of strollers along the way. I mean, it's hard to imagine how you would decide that it was worth it to take a three-month-old on something like this. That's the youngest child I've met, was 3 months old. There are kids who are a year old, and there are lots of toddlers. And for the most part, people say that the children are actually not an impediment, but they're the reason that they're going.
She says she actually wouldn't have left had she not been had she not had this baby, because she said, "Well, I never left before." So she says that, you know, it's being a single mother and not having work or anything to offer her child was, you know, part of the reason that she joined the caravan.
They're elderly people, you know, a man with the crutches, entire extended families.
¿Y qué es lo más duro de este viaje?
Walking, caminar. Walking is the hardest thing we can do.
It would be hard to put a number on it, but it's easy to say that half of the group or more mm-hmm. are young men. And that makes sense. They're able-bodied. They're going to look for work.
¿Vinieron juntos? Sí. ¿Son hermanos o amigos?
Son primos. Somos primos.
Primos. ¿Y vinieron solos?
No.
¿Con otros familiares?
The question of whether people are in imminent danger or they're just seeking a better life, it's very hard to pull those two things apart. Hmm. And then there are groups that face grave danger.
Somos del Salvador. Vienen.
Son del Salvador.
Del Salvador, sí.
Entonces, I met four people today.
Now, this group is carrying a gay pride flag. una bandera de los derechos gay, ¿no es cierto?
Sí,
sí. Three gay men and a trans woman who had left El Salvador and hightailed it to the border to try to join the caravan. They're experiencing discrimination in their country.
Procedimiento trans, pero
the trans woman said that she was told that if she went through with the operation that they would cut off her breasts. So as one man told me, if you stick around long enough, you're going to find everything in this group. The basketball court where some of the migrants slept Monday night is right next to the river. It's on the banks of the river. And migrants have been climbing up to a path that leads to the river to bathe this morning. Creo que más adelante. ¿Y usted de dónde es?
Nicaragua.
¿De Nicaragua?
Sí.
¿Y cuándo se unió a la caravana?
Tengo más de 20 días.
So I met this man who told me his name was Sam. He'd been walking for 20 days.
Mm-hmm.
I met him as we walked down to the river. He's going to bathe. And he told me that he had two daughters.
Gemelitas.
Sí. ¿Y cómo se llaman? Two twin daughters. They're 4 years old.
Una se llama Sammy y la otra se llama Andrea.
Sammy and Andrea. And he was going for them and a new set of twins that are due on Christmas Eve.
Se compone mi esposa va a tener gemelos.
Wow. ¿Y por qué quiere irse con este grupo? ¿Se siente más seguro con este grupo
sí,
que solo?
Más seguro. Más seguro en este grupo porque somos bastante.
He says he's limping and he says that one of his feet is not doing well, but he's not going to stop and rest because he wants to keep going with the caravan because he feels safer, that there's a safety in numbers and there are so many of them. And now that we're heading.
And what is, in his mind, what happens when he reaches the U.S. and how does this change his circumstances?
So the majority of people I've interviewed feel that it's always hard to get across the border. And this will just make it easier for them to get through Mexico and get to the border. I don't think they're thinking necessarily about what's going to happen when they arrive.
But he clearly has it in his head that something good happens or else he wouldn't be taking this journey.
Yes, I think people really do feel that this caravan has given them the hope that they may actually make it. I think having crossed the border into Mexico and not having been successfully turned back, and then being given food and water and used clothes and really being welcomed here has given them the hope, as unrealistic as it might seem, that the same thing might happen when they reach the U.S. A lot of people are drawing that comparison, saying, you know, we made it across the border into Mexico, we can make it across the border into the U.S. ¿Con sueño? No. ¿Tienes fiebre? This little girl says she has a fever. ¿Han ido al médico para él?
Ahorita no he ido.
Ahorita creo que hay médico si ella no se siente bien. Yesterday was an interesting turning point. Morale was high after people were able to get into Mexico. And they had done this long march from Hidalgo to Tapachula, the first leg of the trip. And things went relatively well. And then it was the second leg of their Mexican journey, Tapachula to Huixla. And they all set out with a lot of energy and they were piling into trucks and they were walking. And there was a young man, 21 years old, Melvin. He was on a truck, which I gather was quite crowded. And he fell off the back and he was killed. And traffic sort of stopped. The police were there. The Human Rights Commission workers were there. And the next day, the newspapers said, primer muerto, the first death of the migrant caravan. It's hard to know if that's the first death, but that's the first documented case of someone dying on the caravan. And I think it was the first time that the sort of real danger came into sight for a lot of people. And the police were there and the authorities were there. And so I think that all along the highway, people were hearing about what had happened. And then they woke up to seeing the news on the front page of a newspaper called El Diario Sur.
This is the president's tweet, S.E. He says, sadly, it looks like Mexico's police and military are unable to stop the caravan heading to the southern border of the United States. Criminals and unknown Middle Easterners are mixed in. I have alerted Border Patrol and military that this is a national emergency. I guess he meant emergency. must change laws.
But we're going to call it the Democrat Party. And it's openly inviting millions of illegal aliens to break our laws, violate our borders, and overwhelm our nation. The Democrats want caravans. They like the caravans. A lot of people say, I wonder who started that caravan.
Here, you would never know that Trump and all the tweets even existed.
Maritza Isabel García, ¿y usted sabe algo de la política en los Estados Unidos, de qué está pasando allá en la frontera o con el presidente Trump?
None of the migrants themselves are aware of the firestorm around them in the U.S.
Mm-hmm. ¿Sí sabe que hay elecciones allá? No sabe. She doesn't know about the midterm elections. Gracias, señora. ¿Hay elecciones ahorita allá en Estados Unidos?
No.
¿Y cómo se llama usted? They say that they don't know about the midterm elections. They're not informed of that. ¿Y usted cómo se llama?
Gracias.
So a man who gave me only his last name, Semi Flores, said that they don't know about the politics, the elections, what Trump has been saying about the caravan. They just know that he doesn't want them.
What many people told me is that all they know is that Trump doesn't want us, or Trump doesn't like us, or Trump doesn't love us, but they are not aware of the day by day how things are playing out. I think maybe one in 10 knows that there are midterm elections coming up at all.
La verdad es que no sé.
Porque nosotros pensamos que si ya de aquí a...
What a number of people have told me is that they feel sadness, tristeza, that they feel that any humane politician would see what they were going through and let them in. So that may seem wild as a proposition, but that's what I'm hearing from people on the ground. And people are reacting to their own local politics in terms of the timing of this precise caravan. It doesn't seem to have dovetailed with, political events in the U.S.
Annie, I'm struck that despite what people in this caravan are telling you, that they are not that aware of what's going on in the midterm elections, that the timing here means that they are inevitably going to be used to animate the political forces in the U.S. who are the least sympathetic to their cause, and that we're in a moment where who gets animated politically matters a great deal because it dictates who's going to show up at the polls, who's going to be elected, and what our immigration policies are going to look like.
Yeah, I mean, I would say that they're playing into the hands. This is almost felt to Republicans, to Trump supporters, possibly even to the president himself, as something of a political gift, a way to really stir up or mobilize the conservative base, people who are worried about open borders, who want that wall to be built, that was a way to sort of resurrect that message.
It's almost like this kind of colossal political accident, but that they managed to like capture America's imagination 2 weeks before these incredibly important elections that are already about questions of national security.
Yeah, it's kind of incredible because at this crucial moment, this really large group of people has almost materialized as if to fulfill the political imagination, not just of Trump supporters, but also liberal, progressive Americans who can point at nursing mothers sitting on cardboard boxes and the image of a migrant that isn't the MS-13 gang member that Trump has portrayed migrants to be. So this group, they each have their own story, but they have all played into the hands of the political reality of the moment in a way that I don't know whether they'll ever understand
I hope that's not condescending, but I think the only way they will understand is if they make it to the border and see what awaits them, because it's so abstract from this distance.
And if they end up making it all the way to the U.S. at the pace that they're currently traveling, when would they conceivably get there?
Well, it's not clear how many miles they'll be able to cover every day. So far, it's only been about 20 miles. So it could be weeks. And however long it ends up taking, it will most certainly be after the U.S. midterm elections. So after all the votes are in and things have been decided one way or the other, these people will still be walking. They'll still be making their way up through Mexico. I'm in the central square of Huicla. It's just after 9:30 on Tuesday, and tonight there's a big rainstorm, and after the storm was over, everyone gathered around a band shell, and mariachis played, and they sang the Honduran anthem. There were mothers and sisters of disappeared migrants who spoke, and then at some point, everyone lit candles, and they raised their arms into the air, and they remembered Melvin Gomez, the migrant who died yesterday after he fell off a truck. Someone lifted a sign into the air that said, "For our Melvin Gomez, we love you." Hola. And after the rally was over, everyone took their candles and put them on the flagstone square until they formed this huge cross.
Over the weekend, the Democratic congressional leaders, Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer and House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi, issued a statement essentially urging their colleagues to ignore Republican efforts to turn the caravan into a midterm issue. The president is desperate to change the subject from health care to immigration, they wrote, because he knows that health care is the number one issue Americans care about. Democrats are focused like a laser on healthcare, they continued, and will not be diverted. We'll be right back.
This podcast is supported by Amelia Perez, Zoe Saldana, Carla Sofia Gascon, and Selena Gomez, star in director Jacques Audiard's audacious, genre-defying movie, hailed as the year's best picture. An electrifying odyssey boasting tour de force performances, liberating song and dance, and bold visuals. The London Standard calls it a work of brilliance. Time hails it an exuberant ode to human possibility. And Vanity Fair raves, there is no other movie like Amelia Perez, a thrilling reminder of the limitless potential of this medium. On Netflix in the US, UK, and Canada.
Many think of beauty and health as disconnected, but beauty and wellness are really two sides of the same coin. Hello, I'm Isabella Rossellini, and in the final episode of This Is Not a Beauty podcast, we'll hear from a cancer survivor, an anthropologist, and a carer of the elderly about the relationship between beauty and health. Listen now on your favorite podcast platform.
Hey, it's John Chase.
And Mari Uehara.
From Wirecutter, the product recommendation service from the New York Times. Mari, it is gift-giving time. What's an easy gift for someone like under 50 bucks?
So in our Gifts Under 50 guide, we have this super cute palm-sized Bluetooth speaker. It comes in an array of cool colors. It's waterproof. You can bring it anywhere. I want one for my garden.
I love it. Check out all of Wirecutter's gift recommendations for yourself and everyone else at nytimes.com/holiday guide.
Here's what else you need to know today.
We're making very clear that the United States does not tolerate this kind of ruthless action to silence Mr. Khashoggi, a journalist, through violence.
On Tuesday, the Trump administration took its first concrete steps toward punishing Saudi Arabia for the murder of Jamal Khashoggi.
We continue to maintain a strong partnership with the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. Neither the president nor I am happy with this situation.
During a news conference, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo said that the U.S. was revoking visas for 21 Saudi officials accused of playing a role in the operation.
These penalties will not be the last word on this matter from the United States. We will continue to explore additional measures to hold those responsible accountable.
And
Aziz Milletim,
my beloved nation, my distinguished friends, members of parliament.
In Turkey on Tuesday, President Recep Tayyip Erdogan demanded that Saudi Arabia extradite the Saudi suspects to Turkey to face prosecution.
Now, this incident took place in Istanbul. Therefore, this team of 18 people, their trials, I'm proposing that their trials be held in Istanbul.
In a highly anticipated speech, Erdogan made clear that he would not accept the Saudi explanation that a rogue operation was behind Khashoggi's assassination.
Of course, we cannot put the blame on a number of security or intelligence officials for such an incident. It will not satisfy either us or the international community.
Above all, Erdogan's speech made clear that after weeks of leaking details about the assassination to the international media, Turkey intends to keep a spotlight on the case.
The international conscience will only be satisfied when everyone is held accountable, the executors and the persons or the people who gave the instruction.
That's it for The Daily. I'm Michael Barbaro. See you tomorrow.
This podcast is supported by ACLU. The ACLU knows exactly what threats a second Donald Trump term presents, and they are ready with a battle-tested playbook. The ACLU took legal action against the first Trump administration 434 times, and they will do it again to protect immigrants' rights, defend reproductive freedom, safeguard free speech, and fight for all of our fundamental civil rights. Join the ACLU today to help stop the extreme Project 2025 agenda. Learn more at ACLU.org.